Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Let's talk about Israel. As of the recording of this program, the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is holding. So, for the short-lived memory of the news cycle, you know, this recent conflict in Israel is old, forgotten news. So it's back to talking about COVID, vaccines, masks, BLM and protests. But since these were significant developments in Israel, I want to address the subject and then draw some spiritual lessons. So let's begin with some overall observations. Nothing new, nothing that the pundits are not already talking about, but some general truths that we should be aware of. First, Palestine was never a nation. The region of Israel, this region of Israel, was under the control of the Ottoman Empire. But when the Ottoman Empire fell in 1922, the British government carved out this region called Palestine. The Muslim Arabs living there never formed a government or nation. It was controlled by the British until 1948, when Israel was given statehood. And this is the argument against letting the Arabs in the region start their own state in the state of Israel. As Israel's former Prime Minister Golda Meir stated, there is no such thing as a Palestinian people. It's not as if we came in and threw them out of their own country. They didn't exist. And the point is that the Arabs in Palestine were nomadic tribes that belonged to the people groups of Jordan and Syria. To quote one source, Palestinian identity is a shallow political veneer that developed in response to Zionism. It serves today as a hostile tool kept sharpened for use against Israel. Unquote. Now, after Israel became a nation in 1948, some of these Arabs in the land of Israel migrated to Jordan and Syria, but for the most part, these countries refused to take in the Arabs living in Palestine for two reasons. First, they didn't want to share their land with these Arab tribes coming out of Israel. And second, if these Muslim Arabs kept their own people in Israel, they could continually lay claim to the land of Israel. And they are laying claim to the land of Israel for religious reasons, not political reasons. The religion of Islam puts a high priority on conquering land for Islam. This is their evangelism. This is their sign of God's approval and blessing, that they have beaten the Jews and they have taken their land, that this is the promised land that belongs to Ishmael, the father of the Arabs, and not to Isaac, the father of the Jews. In 1967, the Arabs in the region attacked the Jewish state of Israel, and this created many Arab refugees and isolated Arab communities on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Before the 1967 war, Jordan controlled the West Bank. So these Arabs living in the region were Jordanian. But after the war, Israel took control of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip as a spoil of war. It's part of Israel proper and is a necessary buffer for Israel's security. Currently, there are 1.8 million Arab Muslim Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip, an area about the size of Queens and just as dense. And there are 2.3 million Muslim Arabs living in the West Bank. In the map I have up here, you can see the Palestinian areas in orange. Also note that 1.9 million Arab Palestinians are living in Israel and are citizens of Israel, about 20% of Israel's citizenship. Now, the Jewish nation would lose its identity if it made all Palestinians citizens. And these Muslim Palestinians are not about to become citizens of Israel. They want their own Muslim state with the Jews off the land. Now, those Muslim Arabs living on the West Bank are under the party called Fatah, the PA authority, and those Muslim Arabs living on the Gaza Strip are under the party called Hamas. Hamas is more radical. As you can see, it's Hamas that's securing weapons from Iran and bombing Israel. The Hamas charter is to wipe out the Jews. Quote from the charter, "Our struggle against the Jews is very great and very serious. It needs all sincere efforts. The Islamic resistance movement is but one squadron that should be supported. Until the enemy is vanquished and Allah's victory is realized, it strives to raise the banner of Allah over every inch of Palestine. It is one of the links in the chain of struggle against the Zionist invaders. Allah blesses him, the Hamas fighter, and grants him salvation. The Prophet Muhammad has said, the day of judgment will not come about until Muslims fight the Jews, when the Jews will hide behind stones and trees. The stones and the trees will say, O Muslim, O Abdullah, there is a Jew behind me. Come and kill him. There is no solution for the Palestinian question except through jihad. Initiatives, proposals, and international conferences are all a waste of time and vain endeavors. Palestine is an Islamic land," unquote, the Hamas charter. So for religious reasons, Hamas will never let the Jewish state and the people exist. In the providence of God, Hamas is in conflict with Fatah, and this is good for Israel militarily, that the Palestinians can't get along with each other. So, did you get all that? Is there any solution for this conflict? Well, world leaders like to talk about a two-state solution, where the Palestinians get to have their own nation within the region of Israel, but that's just talk. It looks charitable. It satisfies the media, but everyone knows it's not going to work because Hamas does not want a two-state solution. They're dedicated to wiping out Israel. And if there are two states, it will only be two nations constantly at war. Peace will only come when one group is finally wiped out as a people and a nation. Creating the nation of Palestine will only empower Hamas to attack Israel continually. The only real solution for the Palestinian people is to emigrate to surrounding Islamic countries. In the Middle East, Islamic nations control 99.7% of the landmass. Israel has only a 1/4 of 1% of the land in the Middle East, and the Arabs won't even give them that much. Now, yes, it would be a hardship for the Palestinians to have to relocate, but in the long run, they will be doing themselves a favor. Why risk your life fighting for a piece of ground and not even a very good piece of ground? Just give it up, move on. That's what I would do. And I'm glad, as followers of Christ, we're not attached to a piece of real estate. Jesus said to the woman at the well in John chapter 4, verse 21, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. For Christians, there is nothing sacred about a certain piece of land. Also, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 10, verse 23, but whenever they persecute you in one city, flee to the next. Isn't it interesting how the left is all for citizens emigrating from Central America because of hardships in their own country? But when it comes to the Palestinians, they're told that they need to stay and fight for control. These Palestinians are never going to win this religious war, and they'll probably die trying. Just give the land to the Jews. For the sake of personal survival, for the sake of charity, or just take it from God that God has given the Jews this small piece of land. But the only good option is to get out. But we know the Palestinian Muslims are not about to do that for ideological reasons, for pride reasons. So the stalemate is going to continue. Israel's strategy is just to wait it out and see how God will eventually bring about a solution. just like when Israel entered the land of Canaan in 1400 BC, it took 4 centuries before Israel's enemies, internal enemies, were finally defeated. It was King David who finally wiped out the last occupiers of the land, the Philistines. It's really amazing how God has put Israel in the same pressure cooker he had them in back in 1400 BC. To occupy a land populated with other people groups that claim the land. I mean, this happened under Moses and Joshua in 1400 BC. It happened under Ezra and Nehemiah when Israel returned to the land in the 5th century BC. And it's happening in our day as Israel is once again returning to the land. And each time, it involves conflict and a great test of faith. God has certainly put the Jewish people in a place of great blessing, but with that blessing comes a need for great obedience and a holy walk with God. God could have planted the Jews on some isolated island in the South Seas, but he planted them right on the land bridge between 3 continents, the crossroads of the world, where all commerce and all armies would march through. But this was a place where they could best represent God and spread his message. And this is really a timeless lesson for all of us. The place of our calling that will be the most difficult will also be the most fruitful. And the place of our calling will be a place we will have to depend upon God the most because the enemies there will be too strong for us. Let me mention a few other general points about this recent attack on Israel by Hamas. I hope you're aware that the Biden administration is responsible for this recent conflict. President Trump halted U.S. aid to Hamas and the Palestinians. The reason? The Palestinians were using the money to make payments to the families of those who martyred themselves killing Jews. And Trump said, enough of that. We're not going to be paying people pensions to kill the Jews. Trump also gave up the notion that Hamas would ever make peace with Israel, that the two-state solution is possible. So he didn't empower Hamas with negotiations. President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, married to Ivanka, he's Jewish, another providence of God. Kushner's approach was that there is no way to make peace with the Palestinians, so work around them. And it was Kushner who helped cast Trump's Middle East peace plan, which ended up being called the Abraham Accords, where the Trump administration left the Palestinians out of the negotiations and worked peace agreements between Israel and other Arab nations. The United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia. Just like in 1979, there were the Camp David Accords, where peace was signed between Israel and Egypt. These Arab countries were now willing to work with Israel because they sensed that if they worked with Israel, that could help push back Iranian influence in the region. And second, you know, these Arab nations were losing their love for the Palestinians and their constant gripe. The Abraham Accords took all of the wind out of the sails of the Palestinians, along with the withholding of U.S. funds. Realize that Hamas and Fatah could never exist on their own. If the U.S. and Europe and the U.N. stopped sending money to the Palestinians, their whole society would collapse and scatter. They don't produce anything. They exist by welfare. The West has actually created the conflict in Israel by creating this artificial society, by not letting the natural consequence of things run their course. You know, think of it as the prodigal son, Luke chapter 15. He's partying it up. He's starting bar fights. He's causing trouble in the community. And rather than running out of money, and rather than having to feed the pigs and come to his senses, a bunch of do-gooders start sending him checks to keep him going. That's not compassion and charity. That's supporting evil. Well, as to be expected, Trump and Kushner's diplomatic solution to the Middle East crisis was continually mocked by the leftist media. Here are a few articles. The Atlantic, Kushner's Middle East plan is un-American. The Washington Institute for Near East Policy, Jared Kushner's peace plan would be a disaster. The Washington Post, Jared Kushner's quest for peace looks increasingly doomed. But after the Abraham Accords were signed and there was peace in the region, Politico put out this piece, how Jared Kushner proved his critics wrong. Quote, rarely has so much mockery been directed at an approach that, in the event, was methodically, creative, and ultimately achieved a breakthrough. Kushner did not make peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, but no one else has either. What he did was find a path for historic deals to normalize relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, with perhaps other Arab countries to follow. The deals have the potential to transform the strategic environment of the region, isolate and reduce the influence of Iran, and of the feckless and corrupt Palestinian political leadership that has served its people poorly. Notice that even Politico calls the Palestinian Authority of Fatah and Hamas feckless, corrupt, and it's not serving its people. But Joe Biden gets into office and he starts talking about supporting the Palestinians. And in April, he sends them all the money that the Trump administration withheld, $300 million. And in May, 1 month later, lo and behold, Hamas begins an unprecedented historic bombardment of Israel. You probably didn't hear about this in the news. This story about Biden sending Hamas $300 million because the media covers for the Democrats. When the United States sent that money, the Middle Eastern culture knew exactly what that meant. It's the United States saying, wink, wink, we're behind you, do what you want. Hamas was led to go to war by the Biden administration. However, recognize this. In the end, Israel wins big and many Palestinians lose their lives. It was an opportunity for Israel to assassinate Hamas leadership, to destroy their hidden bunkers, to destroy their media center, Al Jazeera, and to destroy their stockpile of Iranian missiles. The Palestinians claim that their death toll was around 200, but you can never believe any of those political statements, those public statements. It's more like it was in the thousands. But this is so similar to what happened under the Obama administration. All the policies of Obama to help the Muslims in the Middle East ended up inflaming the Middle East with the Arab Spring and with the rise of ISIS. It ended in more needless death and destruction in the region. And the timeless lesson is that leftist policies purporting to help people, in the end, always destroy people's lives. You know, leftist policies are just so damaging toward those they allege to help. It would be reasonable for somebody to conclude that the Democrats were actually secretly plotting to destroy the Palestinians and Hamas by making believe that they're on the side of the Palestinians. Now, we know that's not true. But it sure looks that way given the way Democrat policies destroy the people they claim to help. By the way, that holds true for leftist policies concerning their support for the Black community, for the Latino community, for illegal immigrants, for transgenders. The left, through its entitlement programs and through its removal of moral law, ends up destroying the very people they claim to help. And this too is the plan of God, where unprincipled civil leaders are raised up to punish an unprincipled evil citizenship. Isaiah chapter 3, I will make mere lads their princes, and capricious children will rule over them, and the people will be oppressed, each one by another, and each one by his neighbor. But that's a whole other message. Some more points. The recent attacks by Hamas show us the rise of anti-Semitism in the world. Last week, There were huge protests against Israel in New York and London and Spain. The BLM organization came out against Israel and for Hamas, which is to be expected because BLM and Hamas hold to the same philosophy, that the way you change the world for good is through violence, that the Jews have no right to a homeland, that the Muslim Arabs are the oppressed people, that they are not the instigators of jealousy and unrest, and the Jews, like all white people, are out to oppress others. There is a spiritual connection between the left in America and Islam, probably because of their mutual hatred for Christianity and God's law, and their mutual love for totalitarianism. So, as we enter the last days, expect a rise in anti-Semitism alongside the rise of the Antichrist spirit in the world. That's Revelation chapter 12. The devil persecutes Israel because God has a plan for Israel that includes Satan's defeat. Now, on a positive side, the rise of anti-Semitism in the West may be an impetus to cause many more Jews to return to the land of Israel because they're not being accepted in the West anymore. Right now, more Jews live outside of Israel than in Israel for economic reasons, for cultural reasons, for religious reasons. Last week, the radical Muslim congresswoman, Rashida Tlaib, was speaking at an anti-Israeli pro-Hamas rally. And behind her, there was a group of Orthodox Jews dressed in black, holding signs saying, "We do not support the nation of Israel." What's going on here? Well, these Orthodox Jews are so self-righteous that the state of Israel is not Orthodox enough for them. You know, they kind of remind me of the Essene community in the days of Jesus. The Essenes were an ultra-Orthodox group of Jews that created their own temple in the wilderness of Judea because they believed that the temple in Jerusalem was hopelessly corrupt. So they lived in the desert waiting for the return of the Messiah. And the irony is that we have no record of Jesus ever visiting that group. So I would not be surprised that the Jews who are to be saved in the apocalypse, prophesied in Revelation chapter 7, do not come from the Hasidic community or the ultra-Orthodox community, but most likely from mainstream conservative Jewish families. In conclusion, despite what we're hearing from some prophetic preachers over this last couple of weeks, this attack by Hamas is not the end of the world. It's not the beginning of the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem, but it's just one of hundreds of steps that God is taking to get the Jewish people to the place where they need to be spiritually and physically. In looking at this whole situation, the spiritual lesson that stands out to me is the suffering of the Jewish people in the plan of God. Not suffering for suffering's sake, but suffering that is meant to bring the elect of God into the kingdom of Christ. Suffering is not effectual for all, but for those who are called into the kingdom of Christ, they do come in through humiliation and suffering. Like the prodigal son who had to lose all and had to be reduced to eating his meals with the swine. God really meant what he said when he told the Jews through Moses that if they would not obey his word and if they would turn to idols, Deuteronomy 28:66, your life shall hang in doubt before you and you will be in dread night and day and have no assurance of your life. And this was a legacy of Israel, slaves in Egypt, then dying in the wilderness because of their sin and unbelief. Then they entered the promised land and there are continual invasions by foreign enemies. There's an internal civil war. Northern Israel is eventually wiped out by the Syrians. Southern Israel is wiped out by the Babylonians. Then a 70-year exile. Then they're back in the land, but they're invaded by the Greeks and the Seleucid Empire. Then there's another destruction in AD 70. Then for the last 2,000 years, they've been experiencing persecution and scattering amongst the Gentiles. In the 20th century, few people have ever experienced a genocide of the Jews experienced under Nazi Germany. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 63. It shall come about that as the Lord delighted over you to prosper you, to multiply you, so the Lord will delight over you to make you perish and to destroy you. And you will be torn from the land where you are entering to possess it. Moreover, the Lord will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. And there you shall serve other gods, wood and stone, which you and your fathers have not known. Among those nations, you shall find no rest. And there will be no resting place for the sole of your foot. But there the Lord will give you trembling heart, failing of eyes, and despair of souls. What a beaten down group of people. And even today, there are only 15 million Jews in the world. God really meant what he said in Deuteronomy 28:62, then you shall be left few in number, whereas you were numerous as the stars of the heaven, because you did not obey the Lord your God. Now, few are willing to admit that the suffering of the Jews is due to their sin. No one is allowed to talk about that today, because that sounds too much like anti-Semitism, or it sounds too much like the justifications used in the Middle Ages for the persecution of the Jews. And besides, Gentile nations are just as guilty of apostasy and unbelief. Let him who is without sin throw the first stone. You know, the sins of the Jews is no justification for the persecution of the Jews. Paul writes that the Jews are to be beloved, even though they're the enemies of the gospel. Romans chapter 11, verse 28, from the standpoint of the gospel, there are enemies for your sake, but from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. And according to the prophecy of the apostles in Acts chapter 4, both Jews and Gentiles were responsible for putting the Messiah to death. Acts chapter 4, verse 27, for truly in this city, there were gathered together against your holy servant Jesus, whom you appointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, along with the Gentiles and the people of Israel. Everyone put Jesus on the cross. So this claim is nonsense, that anti-Semitism in Europe arose because the Europeans were offended that the Jews killed Jesus. No, the persecution of the Jews in Europe was just plain demonic evil. And even though God might use evil people to chasten the Jews for their sin and unbelief, you know, a true Christian would never participate in that, because Matthew chapter 18, woe to the world because of offenses, you know, must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man through whom the offenses come. You know, God may use evil to chasten and refine and persecute his people as he sees fit, but we're never to have a part in that. But back to the point. The Bible does say that the suffering of the Jews was due to their sin. Luke chapter 21, verse 23, for there will be a great distress upon the land and wrath to this people. Luke chapter 19, verse 43, for the days will come upon you when your enemies will throw a barricade against you and surround you and hem you in on every side. And they will level you to the ground and your children within you, and they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation. They rejected their Messiah. Also, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 16, speaking to the Jews, hindering us from speaking to the Gentiles, so that the Gentiles may be saved, with the result that they're always filling up the measure of their sins, but wrath has come upon them to the uttermost. The wrath Paul is speaking about there is probably the beginning of the Jewish wars with Rome, which had already started when Paul wrote this letter. And you know, Orthodox Jews would even agree with this, that they were sent into exile for the last 2,000 years for failing to keep the law of God. And they believe that as a community, if they finally perfectly keep the law of God, the promise of the law will be fulfilled, and the Messiah will return, or the Messiah will come, and the days of restoration will come. But they still don't get it, because they've rejected the program of God through the Messiah being the covering for their sin. So, even in their vain attempt to keep the law of God, in their self-righteousness, they remain under the chastening of God. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 28. Anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much severe punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled underfoot the Son of God and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified and has insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," and again, "The Lord will judge his people." It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of a living God. And don't ever forget that. The wages of sin is death. God is not kidding. And this applies both to Jews and Gentiles. If you reject Christ as a Gentile family group, you will experience the same and even worse consequences for your stubborn rejection of God's salvation plan. But the point I want to emphasize is that Israel is once again being gathered into the land to again go through a time of suffering and purging. You know, we may think about the return of the Jews to the land and imagine that this is going to be a time of Israel's blessing and restoration, as if Israel is going to win every battle like in the Six-Day War. But no, they are about to enter into the prophesied time of Jacob's distress or Jacob's trouble, the like of which has never befallen the Jews. Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 7. "Alas, for the day is great, there is none like it, and it is the time of Jacob's distress." And Matthew 24, 21, "For then there will be a great tribulation, such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will." You say, well, that's just a reference to AD 70 and the destruction of Jerusalem. No, Jesus goes on to say that immediately after the tribulation of those days, the Son of Man will appear in the sky in power and in great glory. So before the coming of the Lord, there will be a great slaughter among the Jews in the land of Israel. A great time of distress, but Israel will be saved. As the Jeremiah text goes on to state. But does that mean all national Israel? No, only a remnant of true believers in Israel will be saved. Those who receive Jesus as their true Messiah. And this is prophesied in the book of Zechariah that Israel will be regathered in the last days, but she's being regathered to go into the fires of refining, and only one third of Israel will remain. Zechariah chapter 13. "It will come about in all the land, declares the Lord, that two parts of it will be cut off and perish, but a third will be left in it. And I will bring the third through the fire, refine them as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. And they will call upon my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God." You know, this is another one of those prophetic truths that evangelicals tend not to bring up in their dealings with Israel, that the whole nation of Israel is being regathered in order to be leveled. That Jerusalem, representing all of Israel, is spiritually Sodom and Egypt. As we read in Revelation chapter 11, verse 8, "And she will be judged." The lesson here is that God judges sin. God is serious. Yes, he judges sin to bring about punishment upon the ungodly, but also to awaken and save the penitent. You know, it's by his mercy that he stops us in our sin and removes from us the comforts of this world. And in my understanding of prophecy, this principle and prophecy doesn't just apply to Israel, but to those who are to be saved among the Gentiles. The church, as we read in the book of Ephesians, is grafted in to true Israel. The church will be going through a time of purging along with true Israel during the apocalypse. And so in his letter about Christian suffering, Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 4, "For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God." And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome of those who do not obey the gospel? And if it is with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? The true people of God suffer to be brought to salvation and holiness. The unsaved suffer only for judgment. The church is connected to the prophetic fulfillment of Israel's regathering and her coming refinement by fire. So keep your eye on Israel. Keep in solidarity with Israel. Thank you for taking the time to listen today. Don't forget to subscribe, to like, to share, to leave a comment below. This program is YouTube number 169, but as far as total programs, this program is number 500, which I suppose is a reason to celebrate. Since I only do one program a week, that represents about 10 years worth of programs. Now, for some of these diehard pundits who do a program 5 days a week, 500 is nothing for them. But I don't want you to listen to me 5 days a week. You have better things to do and better men to listen to. My purpose is to add a little bit to your knowledge and faith through these difficult times. How long will I keep going? Well, apart from some persecution from without or within, I'll go with what God said to Isaiah. Isaiah asks, how long, Lord? And he answers, until cities are devastated and without inhabitants, houses are without people, and the land is utterly desolate. So look out my window. There's still houses out there. I still see people. So let's keep going. May Jesus Christ reign.